I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My guest today is Frank Huguenot, who is a Renaissance man, scientist, a spiritual anthropologist, humanitarian, and a documentary filmmaker. After spending 30 years in Silicon Valley as a technologist and entrepreneur, he wanted to give back to society by producing films that combine the knowledge of all the great wisdom traditions on the planet with the latest in modern physics and quantum mechanics. He has just released his fourth film, a brilliant documentary called The Physics of the Soul, which is now available to view for free from his website, www.beyondmefilms.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Frank, and I look forward to hearing about you and your films. You left Silicon Valley and a prosperous position because you wanted to give back to society, and you have since produced four films, and the latest is called The Physics of the Soul. What are your intentions in accomplishing with your work?
So, and thank you for having me on. You know, I've learned a lot in my life. I'm a very analytical, scientifically minded, but I'm also very spiritually inclined. I've had a lifetime of psychic experiences, precognitive dreams, telepathy, other things that couldn't be easily explained away by, you know, modern science and mm-hmm. how they understand reality. And I've been practicing meditation in various forms for most of my life, actually, and much more rigorously over the last 15 or 20 years. So I wanted to start producing some documentaries that took all the things that I learned that was able to be corroborated by modern physics and quantum mechanics. And then I take a look at all the different wisdom traditions on the planet. Christianity, Buddhism, Islam, Hinduism, etc., and distill out a common substrate between them all, mm-hmm. and then attempt to resynthesize that in a model that is internally self-consistent with all of them. So that's what I really did with my first three films. And then a few years back, I decided I was going to make a series of films on healing. And mm-hmm. so The Physics of the Soul is the first in the series of 10 films that I intend on making on really revolutionizing our understanding of healing.
And what has been your biggest challenge or obstacle?
The biggest challenge is that, especially with The Physics of the Soul, I've gone out and I've attempted to create a film with the target audience being scientifically minded people, mm-hmm. atheistic kind of people, sort of mainstream, you know, Westerners, and to really present something that was compelling and cogent and well researched, because I'm sure that most of the people in your audience are going to love the film. It's right in your wheelhouse. It talks about holistic health. It talks about consciousness and healing. Mm-hmm. But really what the film does is it takes a look scientifically at science itself. And this is a little bit nuanced, but science sort of has a philosophical, in fact, you can go to some universities and take the philosophy of science course. Science has this philosophy built into it that everybody just assumes to be proper in the true way of doing science, and that's this idea of falsifiability, that if you've got a scientific theory, the first thing any scientist is going to do is say to themselves, is this a theory that we can create testable predictions on it? Something like reincarnation. It's impossible to create testable predictions with something like reincarnation. Mm-hmm. So therefore, for most scientific, people, reincarnation is an impossibility. It just, they don't exactly say it doesn't exist. They just say, well, we can't know that's true. So therefore we're going to exclude all of that and everything that we know about biology. And so I take the approach of, okay, that's fine. That's how you want to write. You know, I agree there needs to be a line between science and pseudoscience. That's an important thing to have, especially in the holistic field where there are a lot of charlatans and a lot of people sort of practicing without a license, if you will. So it's vital, even more vital in our arena, to be able to delineate between real science and pseudoscience. It's just that with this idea of falsifiability, they've drawn the line in the wrong area. And the film basically proves that, and it says that because of the model that scientists base their understanding of reality on, they assume that consciousness is a byproduct or an emergent principle, an emergent property, or an epiphenomena of brain function. And so I like having this argument with scientists. You know, we have Maxwell's laws on magnetism. We've got Newton's laws of, you know, thermodynamics and gravity. Whose law is it that says consciousness comes from the brain? You know, where's the peer-reviewed studies? You know, where's the independent verification? Where's this been cited? Where's this been published? And it's never been published anywhere. It's just an assumption that science makes because their model leads them to accept that that's the only possibility because of their materialistic approach to, you know, to reality. They think that consciousness is a end result of chemical reactions and electrical impulses in the brain. So that's fine. Let's use the scientific model to study this. And it seems reasonable to me that we can come up with at least a half dozen, if not 10 to 12 reasonable, testable predictions that come out of this theory that consciousness comes from the brain. For example, a person shouldn't be able to affect another person's biophysiological, you know, parameters at a distance without that person knowing about it. A person should not be able to affect the random number generator in a computer with their minds. You should not be able to affect the result of a blind double slit experiment. And we can go on and on and on with this. There's very many studies that have been done along these things. And each one of these testable predictions that are out there, the result, it's easily to do, it's easy to do science where the result of your experiment should be 50-50. It should be completely left up to chance. And yet what we see in experiment after experiment after experiment is that that each one of these things has literally been falsified. In other words, this entire idea that consciousness is a byproduct of the brain function is false. Now, why do I say all this? The reason I say all this is because this realization that consciousness does not come from the brain breaks science. Because science is based on this idea of materialism, that consciousness comes from the brain, and that this line that they've drawn in between pseudoscience and real science is based on this. As soon as you prove or falsify, or actually that's the way it works in science, is as soon as you disprove that theory that consciousness comes from the brain, then all of a sudden it disproves the whole idea of falsifiability, if you follow what I'm saying. As soon as you've done that, there's basically three different possibilities. And all the different theories and ideas and et cetera on how consciousness interacts with the physical world, there's three different buckets you can put all the theories in. There's the materialistic bucket where consciousness is an emergent property of the brain. There's panpsychism where somehow consciousness is everywhere. It's ubiquitous and pervasive in reality, and it somehow intermingles with reality and to give us the experiences that we have. And then there's idealism, which is that consciousness itself is beyond space and time, and that the entire universe that we experience is an epiphenomena of consciousness. But these last two possibilities, neither one of these can you create falsifiable predictions out of it. So once you get to that conclusion, you realize that that whole line where they've drawn, the line in the sand that scientists have drawn for what is and what is not good science has been obliterated. Right. So that's what the physics of the soul does. And it says basically that science will never be able to understand anything biological, given their current model that's materialistic based, that there is an invisible, unseeable, unmeasurable force, life, spirit, soul, whatever you want to call it, vitalism, that is behind every living organism, that reincarnation actually is the driving force behind all evolutionary biology, and that healing is an attribute of consciousness, then they're never going to be able to understand anything. We have a $3 trillion healthcare system in this country that everybody agrees is failing. I like to think of as food as medicine. And so if you say that, then actually we have a $200 billion healthcare system in this country that's failing, and we're putting poison on our medicine with all the pesticides and herbicides and everything else that we put on our food. And the reason that we've done this is because we have not understood what life is and what biology is. That's the physics of the soul. The next film that I'm working on currently is called Modern Spiritual Biology, which takes this. The first film basically says, look, the model that science uses to understand biology is fundamentally incorrect. So now the next film I'm working on, Modern Evolutionary, or Modern Spiritual Biology, is an alternative worldview on biology that has a spiritual-centric perspective on what anything biological is. And then the film after that is called A Subtle Human Anatomy. And that film takes what we've learned in the first two films and starts to overlay all the chakras, nadis, meridians, subtle bodies, all these other subtle energy fields associated with the human body, and how each one of these fields interoperates with the tissues, glands, and organs, and creates the entire human being. And then all the other subsequent films that I'll be working on will be talking about traditional Chinese medicine, Qigong, Ayurveda, holistic medicine, how all of these other acupuncture, how all of these other modalities are internally self-consistent with the model that we've presented.
Have you thought about using energy as your unifying model?
Sure, of course. I mean, energy, spirituality, consciousness, right, soul. Right. I mean, if you understand that consciousness is beyond space and time, Or if you accept that, or if we can assume that. I mean, science is based on four rather significant assumptions. It's kind of like science's dirty little secret. They don't want anybody to know. But, you know, the idea of objectivity being an assumption. And there's a few others there as well. But if you can assume, and so if given that science is already based on assumptions, to me, to make an assumption that, okay, consciousness is beyond space and time and we're spiritual beings and we're going to assume that to be true to move forward and come up with a better understanding of biology, I don't think that's an unreasonable assumption to make. But if consciousness is beyond space and time, there's nothing that we can use in this three-dimensional world to measure it. Right? So you can talk about energy. Is energy a manifestation of consciousness? Yes. So, you know, consciousness is beyond energy. Consciousness in its pure, unmanifest form is just pure awareness. Energy is a byproduct of that, just like a tree is a byproduct of that, or a rock is, or a pig.
Well, I used energy as the unifying concept for a theory of nursing and health. This was probably 40 years ago. And I worked on it over many years, but I combined it with a systems theory. Are you familiar with systems theory that was popular probably 30, 40 years ago, where you can take the systems theory, you could apply to individuals, families, communities, nations, and the world. And it's a theory where I used it and as related to nursing and health. And then I started as to take man. Man is an energy system there are different types of energy within that system, then there's potential energy, there is active energy, and there's other types of energy. Then man exchanges with the environment, and the environment is also energy. So food would be an exchange, oxygen would be an exchange. But if you take that up to another level, the family is an energy exchange. They have individuals within that energy system, the same as an individual has organs that are energy. And so if you take it up and you take it up to the nation, then you got communities, and you take it at the family level, you've got the members within the family. They have roles, the same as the body has roles. I don't know if I'm explaining it very well, but...
And I understand all this very well.
Yeah, and then, you know, I could follow this all the way through. When there's deficits, then you may interact with the next level of, you know, like the family may turn to the community for help through social services. The family's always turning to the community for food supply, for legal assistance, etc. And then I took the last book that I did on this. I took a community, a specific community, and I looked at that community using all of the energy concepts, did an assessment, did planning, did implementing, and did an evaluation. And that book was very well received by nursing, and it is still, I'm still getting royalties from it. And it came out in 1998, I think it was. But I had worked on it for about 30 years before that. I wanted a theory that went back to a concept so it would be easier to work with. And so the concept was energy.
Yeah, everything's energy. This is what Einstein told us 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And, you know, there are more and more energy healing treatments like Reiki, as you mentioned, therapeutic touch. A lot of these dealing with energy. The only problem that I have, the body is energy, but when you weigh the body, you weigh it in terms of pounds. When you look at energy in terms of electromagnetic energy, it's not pounds anymore. You're looking at, is it frequency? So I would hope that one day we would be able to get to the point with energy that we were able to use one measurement instead of all of these different measurements. Does that make any sense?
Sure. You know, if you look at chi or ki or prana mm-hmm. or mana, mm-hmm. you know, which are all words to say the same thing. You're talking about, you know, the life force energy within a person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, certainly you can have a 300-pound person with really, really low prana and, you know, a 98-pound person with an incredible amount of prana or chi.
But you don't have a measure for that. You say low, but what is low? That's why I like the energy that the two guys are using, because they say 500 is love. I can't remember what the term was they used, but 200 is hate. Anything above 400 gives to the environment. Anything under 400 takes from the environment. I may have the numbers not quite right, but you'll get the concept. 500 is love. That's what I would like to see eventually, is being able to measure and have one measure for all of the different energies, but maybe that's not realistic.
That's what I was trying to get at, actually, is that, you know, they're really different scales. Like mm-hmm. I said, you could have a 300-pound person, and that's just kinetic energy stored in their fat cells or whatever, mm-hmm. who has, you know, who may be 200 or whatever scale you're using. Whereas a a person who weighs 100 could have a really high. So there's really no correlation between the physical body and the life force energy, their consciousness. And yeah. So I don't know if you can come up with one unifying force that, or unifying theory that put together all the different energies into one system, into one measurement.
Can you tell
plus
us?
What's that? What's your question?
Can you tell us then about the last form, the people you have, and what they're a little bit more about what the focus was?
On the physics of the soul?
Yeah.
Sure. The film featured, you know, a bevy of famous authors, scientists, doctors, researchers who've looked into different areas of research into healing, into consciousness studies. Now, there's almost nothing in the film at all that goes into anecdotal or scientific experimentation. There's lots of other films that have done that. What this film really does is talk beyond that. And the people in the film, you know, it features Adam Curry, Gary Zukav, Stuart Hameroff, Bruce Lipton, Larry Dossey, Marilyn Schlitz, William Tiller. The two people that I really like the most in the film are Bill Bengston and Garrett Modell, who are really... Bengston has developed this really amazing healing technique that's just mind-blowing. In fact, he's gotten kicked out of a few universities because he freaked people out with the results he was getting. Yeah, he's an amazing guy. And Garrett Modell, he's a very conservative material physicist in Boulder, Colorado. But he's done a lot of research. In fact, what he does with his freshmen every year is he has them do psi experiments, different experiments on mind control to, you know, first of all, get them to forget everything they think they know about science. And then he goes into teaching them about, you know, material physics. But it's really great to have two real scientifically minded people in the film who can really speak to the experiments that are being done and how they're being executed. Certainly one of the biggest problem in this arena, everything from J.B. Ryan back in the 20s and 30s and onwards to a lot of the experiments that were done in the 60s and 70s, were that the people who were conducting these experiments were not trained conventional orthodox science scientists. So they didn't understand how to, you know, write articles or to set up a test apparatus or to make a controlled experiment. So they would have these results, which were legitimate results, but the experimentation itself got panned because the conventional scientists just looked at the, you know, the methods and techniques that they used and said, well, this is all bogus. You did this all wrong. It had nothing to do with the results themselves. It was just what protocols did they use? You know, how did you, you know, sort of sanitize the experiment to make sure you filtered out any unwanted noise and all that kind of stuff. But recently in the 80s and 90s and so forth, the experimentation into consciousness studies has been much, much more rigorous and done with a scientific base. So now the results we're getting when we're looking at consciousness having an effect on the material world are statistically significant. I think Adam Curry in the film said something like, you know, the cumulative results of the experiments put the results at like one in a trillion. That consciousness has to be somewhere outside of space and time, and that all the experiments prove this. I mean, they're one of their biggest. Adam was up in the Pear Lab up in Princeton with Robert John and some of the others up there, and they had these random number generators positioned all around the planet, and they got some anomalistic readings on these every now and then, and for certain events, but before a couple hours before the airplanes crashed into the buildings on 9/11, these things went completely bonkers off the charts. So that's a very clear indication there where, you know, the collective subconscious of all of us can have an effect on the material world. And they've done just hundreds and hundreds of experiments. Some of my favorite experiments are on presentience, where you're, they started doing experiments on random number generators back in the 60s and 70s on can a person affect a random number generator, a computer generator, and they got, again, statistically significant results. It was different than 50-50 mm-hmm. and very and then they started realizing, yeah, instead of zeros and ones, they wanted to be able to see if people can affect what was coming with the screen with in terms of, you know, pleasant images or unpleasant images. In other words, rainbows and dolphins and bunny rabbits and cute kittens versus, you know, snakes and spiders and, you know, scary things. And so they started hooking up all these biophysiological sensors to people, you know, galvanic skin response, blood mm-hmm. pressure, mm-hmm. Pulse, respiratory, heart rate, all these things. And they started to get corresponding biophysiological reactions, stimulus. You know, you would have heightened, tension and, your pulse mm-hmm. would go up, your blood pressure would go up, corresponding with the unpleasant or the scary images. But what they started to discover was that the biophysiological reactions would start happening 4 to 5 seconds prior to the stimulus even happening. Mm-hmm. So there's something about our consciousness. You know, we all have that somatic feeling within us, that intuition, that gut feeling, oh, I shouldn't get on this airplane. I shouldn't go right. I should go left or whatever. And they started to be able to measure this and observe that our consciousness has the ability to go out into the future for a few and bring back salient information.
Mm-hmm. Is your overall end product showing how consciousness affects the physical, or is it to show how healing occurs, or what is your long-term goal in all of this?
My long-term goal is I want people happy. That's my end product.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at healing, I like to look at healing happening on 5 different levels. There's the physical level, of course, mm-hmm. and there's social, which, especially here in the West, we don't really look in terms of social health.
Mm-hmm.
It's all just lumped into mental health, but mm-hmm. you can break that up into social health, emotional health, and mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of these three needs to be, taken care of individually and separately and understood separately. So it's physical health, mental health, emotional health, social health, and spiritual health. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to look outside the window right now in the United States or on the planet in general and realize that we're not a very healthy people.
Mm-hmm.
And so really what I'm focused on in all my work and in all of my films is for people to be happy, you know, for people to understand that the model of reality that we've been sold in textbooks and schools and laboratories, et cetera, and through religions and all the other sources of philosophy and everything else on the planet has kind of sold us down a river, and that we're much more powerful beings than we've been led to believe. And if people start to understand who we truly are, what our true nature is, and we start to take responsibility for our own health on all 5 levels, and start to meditate, start to eat better, start to imbibe the fact that we are spiritual beings experiencing a human existence, and to honor that and have reverence for that, we can all be much, much happier people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what my end product is, a happy planet.
I found in my own life that I was getting very tired, and I thought, well, maybe it's because I'm 85, but I've never been tired before. And what I discovered was that I had gotten so busy physically that I had eased up on my daily meditation. But at the same mm-hmm. time, I had this consciousness energy pumped into my house. So that was raising my consciousness at the same time that I was stopping meditating, which was lowering my consciousness. At least that's what I believe. And my diet remained the same because I'm vegan, I eat organic, I am very careful. I don't eat gluten because I'm gluten sensitive. I don't eat sugar. And so my diet is pretty good, and I walk every day, and so everything else was normal, but it was the meditation. And once I got back meditating regularly every day, the energy came back. So I think that there's something to what you're saying about everything fitting together holistically to make people healthy and happy. And if you mess up on one part, it affects the same as going back to the systems theory in the body. You know, if one part of the body gets messed up, the rest of them try to accommodate to that, but they're not as efficient as it was before, if that makes sense.
That's completely correct. And you know, your energy has a huge effect on your social circles, which is why social health is so important, mm-hmm. and why forgiveness is a socially energetic a healing modality. Mm-hmm. Like, in other words, in a systems theory, when you're looking at, you know, what forgiveness is, you know, it's basically just a letting go, and it just, you know, you think of a bank holding a mortgage and they forgive the loan. It's like, it's exactly the same thing. You've got this, you know, to err is human, is to forgive is divine. It's literally an act of divinity to release that stuck, stale energy through forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And through a social systems theory, you know, perspective, you can see how that creates social health. So, you know, you've been in a house or a neighborhood where someone who's a really malignant person has come home, or he comes through the neighborhood, or everybody can feel him, even though he's not even there, or they don't necessarily see him. So, you know, our emotions are very contagious, and this acts both positively and negatively. And it's important that people take responsibility. If you go through and watch all my films, I take a great deal of care and effort into not producing what I call documentary porn. In other words, it's very easy and cheap, and you know, it's sort of a cheap tool to put in a bunch of footage of, you know, pharmaceutical companies and the FDA and nuclear holocaust and urban blight and Ethiopian starving children, and getting a real, you know, eliciting a really strong emotional response, and people want to watch those films. But I find that approach actually extremely disempowering. You know, because at the end of the day, we have to take responsibility for our own existence. And if you're sitting there blaming the pharmaceutical companies or the government or Congress you know, or Wall Street or whatever else, you're not taking responsibility. And so, you know, this is also another part of a key part of us becoming healing is breaking that addiction we have to all the stimulus that we have that's sort of keeping us, you know, from really taking responsibility. You know, turn off your TV set, you know, go out for a walk, you know, put your, leave your cell phone at home. So that's really, really the focus of everything I'm doing is meditation and taking good care of ourselves.
Well, the spirit of the social, I think, is so important. And you see this especially with older people. They develop disabilities and all, and they aren't able to get out and have the social life they had previously. But I find that it happens anyhow as you get older, because, you know, I have taught thousands of students in my years in academia. And, you know, I've had lots of, I've traveled around Europe, and I've known, have friends and all around Europe and friends around the United States, but they all kind of drop off as you get older. And my sister, I think, is an excellent example. She's in Tucson, Arizona. She was living in a condo, I believe. No, she was living in a house. And after a while, her family stopped coming as often as they did previously. She had a neighbor that she socialized a lot with, and the neighbor moved. And my sister decided she wanted to move out of her house and into an elderly community, so she had social contact because she wasn't getting it at home. And she found, you know, groups that matched her interest when she moved, and she is so happy now that I have trouble reaching her on the phone to talk with her because she's so busy with all her activities, which I think is great. But, you know, without that social interaction, it affects your health.
No, absolutely. But it really does go full circle. The more you put attention to these five levels of healing, mm-hmm. the physical, social, mental, emotional, and spiritual, and the healthier you become, the less important social becomes. Mm-hmm. But there's a paradox there, because the less important it becomes, the more social you're going to be. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the people who sit around in their cribbing and they're alone and, you know, why doesn't my son ever call me and all this kind of stuff. You know, you're exuding this negative energy out into the world. Whereas mm-hmm. if you meditate and you eat better and you take better care of your mind and your soul, your social life will go off the charts. And that's just part of being a normal, healthy being. Energetically speaking, when you're imbibing that higher frequency energy, you're going to be socially magnetic. You're going to have more charisma. You're going to have more people who want to hang out with you. Yeah.
Now, where would you put the environment? Because the environment is so important too, and intelligence. Because if you don't know about proper nutrition, you don't know what milk does. And these are environmental things. What air, pollution. You know, there's so many things in our environment, all the chemicals, all the heavy metals. I mean, so many things in our environment that affect our physical health. Where do you put the environment in your framework?
Well, obviously, you know, we're not being very good custodians of the planet right now.
No, we aren't.
I'm fortunate enough to live up in Boone, North Carolina, and I'm looking out the window and I live on top of a mountain in the middle of a forest. So I'm somewhat blessed that way. But I do caution, you know, for people who live in a place that's energetically or chemically or other ways not as healthy as other places, again, to not be disempowered by your own set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. You know, you should be able to, certainly remediate a lot of the side effects of a lot of those hazardous chemicals or EMF or whatever toxins are out there, with a lot of nutrition, diet, exercise, meditation, etc. And if you have the wherewithal to leave that and be living in a better place or a healthier place, that's great. But at the same time, you can certainly, for example, if you're meditating in the same place every day, you're changing the vibrational frequency of that place where you're sitting. Mm-hmm. And if you have a group of people meditating in the same place, it has an exponential increase. Mm-hmm. on that vibrational frequency increase that you're experiencing or that you're actually creating. In other words, you know, you do have a lot more control over your immediate environment than you think you do. And so you have a responsibility almost to do what you can, no matter where you're at, to make the place that you're living as healthy as possible.
Well, see, I know that, and you know that. But a lot of people don't. And that's why I'm thinking maybe there needs to be something in your approach that looks at the environment. Because, you mentioned that you can avoid certain things, and that's true. And you can build up your body to be more resistant to those things, and that's true. But then there's also the people that don't have that information and think everything is fine when it isn't. Like, I don't trust a lot of doctors these days, but a lot of people do. And they go to doctors, and my brother's an excellent example. I had lung cancer 44 years ago. I used alternative. I'm still here. My brother had lung cancer when he was 91. They gave him radiation 5 days a week for 5 weeks, which is too much for a 91-year-old, within 2 to 3 weeks after he died. And so a lot of people do not have the information they need. And so I don't know how you would get that into the framework, but it's the environment and it's the hazardous effect of the environment and how you can deal with that. The other thing I think we talked about earlier, and I'd like to ask again so we have it for the listeners, do you plan on integrating some of the researchers who are working with spiritual concepts like forgiveness, gratitude? A faith is another big one that a lot of, and there's a guy at Duke that has done a lot of research on faith. And I mentioned the Forgiveness Project, I think is it at Stanford. And you said you have a friend there. And then there's also a gratitude project at one of the universities where they're working on, you know, researching the concepts. So will that be part of your films at some point?
Probably not, actually.
No.
I mean, certainly my entire work is all spiritually based.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like I said, I look at, for example, you know, you'll be on Facebook or someone will send you an article and it says quantum mechanics proves life after death.
Mm-hmm.
No, it does. You know, no, it doesn't. That's not how science works. And stop printing those articles because it makes us all look like idiots. Like, we have to understand how science works, how a scientific mind works, and be able to have a conversation so we can, you know, right the ship.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at in all my work, you know, who was Jesus? What did he say? And Buddha and Muhammad and Krishna and Rumi and so many other, and try to parse out what they say into a consistent understanding of us from a spiritual perspective, you know, and then regurgitate that and put it out there as you know, this mm-hmm. is a reasonable alternative model for us to understand ourselves mm-hmm. compared to the scientific model, which is all very materialistic and somewhat atheistic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's killing the planet, and it's completely wrong. I mean, the science itself proves that it's wrong. And so my approach really is, it's all very spiritually centric. It's all based on spirituality. It always has been. But my approach right now is to really attempt to create a paradigm shift, a sea change within the scientific community for how we look at these things. And once that happens, then you can go back and look at gratitude or faith
mm-hmm.
or forgiveness or acupuncture or traditional Chinese medicine or prayer or meditation and actually have a basis for understanding, oh, that's how forgiveness works. It's not just, you know, I mean, it'll be a scientific understanding. Oh, this is what forgiveness, this is actually what's happening, mm-hmm. and this is why it works. And I didn't do that, you know, what you're suggesting, I didn't mm-hmm. really do that in the Physics of the Soul.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the science is out there, the experiments are all represented in dozens of different films. I'm trying to get beyond all that. You know, we've done it over and over again. The results are in, it's incontrovertible that, you know, the consciousness does not get produced by the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does all that mean? And how can we move forward? And so I'm more I'm more interested in reshaping and reforming our understanding of evolutionary biology and how life works and what healing is, rather than get caught up in the little minor things like forgiveness and gratitude and faith. Not that they're particularly minor in and of themselves, but in the grand scheme of things, those are just little isolated components to a much broader understanding of life.
But from a healing point of view and from a holistic healing point of view, these are very important, and they are not being included. Very few people look, the physicians I interview on my holistic health show, very few of them use a holistic approach. And the thing that gets left out mostly are the mental, spiritual aspects of, you know, health. And so as a nurse, I'm more interested personally in how forgiveness, what effect does that have on health and healing? And as we talked earlier, those people who are unforgiving have anxiety that causes depletion of the killer cells in the body. For me, that's important. And, you know, when you look at a lot of the spiritual attributes, it's important to me that health professionals learn more about the mental, spiritual aspects and what effect they have on the body right now in terms of people staying healthy and in terms of healing, you know. So my focus, I think, is different than yours in that I'm more, I guess because I'm a practitioner, I'm more down at the level of what is going to help the people, you know, in practice. Does that make sense?
Sure. And, you know, the really encouraging news is that in hospitals across the country, in the intake forms now, patients are constantly being asked about their spiritual disposition and what kind of practices they have, and they're encouraged to continue using. There was a letter sent out from the AMA to doctors across the country that basically explained to them that, if patients come in and they're talking about any kind of spiritual orientation or preferences or spirituality-based healing processes, to honor and respect them and to treat them seriously and not poo-poo them. And so what we're seeing right now is a sea change. You know, in the scientific community, they're much more orthodox and stuck in this very materialistic paradigm. But in the medical industry, they're starting to realize that whatever they're doing isn't working, that patients aren't being cured, that healing doesn't really happen, and that there's the things that they've been taught and the way they're treating patients, you know, by the time they're getting patients, they're getting multiple organ failures and people who are really, really sick. And so what we're seeing now out of the health industry and the American Medical Association is a much more broader openness to integrative medicine, to meditation, to acupuncture, to a holistic, spiritualistic kind of basis for healing. And that this is extraordinarily encouraging. It's happening in hospitals across the country.
But not to the extent that I want. And also, I think that sometimes practice has been way ahead of research. And I'll give you an example. When I had lung cancer in 1974, my doctor put me on high-dose vitamin A, which, and by high dose, I mean I started at 200,000 international units for a week, then 100,000, and then 50,000 for a year. And as you know, the recommended is 5,000, and it's a fat soluble vitamin. And so I told my doctor, I said, well, I'm a little concerned because this. And he said, well, I'll give you vitamin E, which will help with the toxicity. And I said, yeah, but vitamin E is also fat soluble, and you're giving me a toxic dose. However, I did it. I did not have side effects. He told me that the reason I was taking it was to prevent the normal cells from converting to cancer cells. And do you know, it took until about 5 years ago until the research proved that what he told me back then was true, and they did research on breast cancer cells, normal cells, precancer cells, did nothing to the cancer cells, nothing to the normal cells, but it reverted the precancer cells back to normal. So, you know, this guy was very advanced, but other doctors were practicing like that also. But the research took a long, long time before they caught up with it. And unfortunately, the medical association took that doctor's license in, within 5 years after I, you know, consulted him. So again, what I'm saying is I think sometimes the practice is way ahead of research too.
No, absolutely. It's a huge issue with, you know, funding, and there's such a tremendous amount of prejudice and bias within the scientific community.
Mm-hmm. We're getting close to the end, Frank, so I need to ask you about your films, any services, products, book, and how the listeners can reach you.
Sure. All my films are available for free at beyondmefilms.com. The first film I did 8 years ago was Beyond Me. So the website's Beyond Me Films. And if you want to reach out and contact me, all that info is on the contact page. And like I said, all my films for now are free.
And what is your contact information?
Just Frank at beyondmefilms.com if you want to drop me a line.
I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show, and I hope some of the information will be useful to you. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all shows for the past 7 years under the blog. You will also find much of the research on natural ways to deal with cancer and other health conditions, and can sign up for my free monthly newsletter. On my website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find many of the 135 interviews from radio and television over the past 2 years about my book on treating lung cancer naturally and holistically when I was diagnosed 41 years ago next month and given 6 months to live by traditional medicine who offered chemo and surgery. This book was published in November 2012 and was a bestseller on Amazon. You will find endorsements of the book, a place to buy the book, and an earlier one from 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. On my third website, you will find information on the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation, begun last year and currently in the phase of completing the website. This site is at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. Information on how the foundation differs from others, board members, research on holistic natural ways to deal with cancer, including mental and spiritual interventions, interviews with cancer physicians and survivors, and more. If you would like to donate to the work I am supporting, there is a tab to donate, and I can offer you a tax exemption receipt if living in the United States. I also invite you to join me on Facebook at my Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Carl Helvey. On my Holistic Health Show page at www.facebook.com/pages/Holistic Health Show, and the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation page at www.facebook.com/Beat Lung Cancer Natural Alternative. On LinkedIn, I invite you to join me under my name, Dr. Carl O'Helvey. On Twitter, I invite you to join me at www.twitter.com/HolistHealthShow, HolistHealthShow. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to having you here in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host.